This 2017 revision of Feeding Boo-Boos for Horses has been extensively condensed and edited for a faster flow of the very important information. Copyright 2017, Dr. Regan Golub.
Welcome to the Exploring Inner Space and Dynamite Training Seminar in Sedona, Arizona. With us are Dr. Regan Golub and Judy Sinner. Both are Gold Executive Directors with Dynamite Specialty Products. Today they are discussing some common horse feeding boo-boos. They feel that nearly all soundness and training problems are the direct result of nutritional imbalance or deficiencies, and that most of us have made these mistakes with our horses. Please note that this is an independent training seminar and may not necessarily reflect the views of Dynamite Marketing Incorporated.
This lecture is called Common Feeding Boo-Boos. People have said, why don't you call it Common Feeding Mistakes? The reason is because there are no mistakes. There are only experiences, and it's how we learn. So my feeling is that my horses have been my teachers. I've made all of these boo-boos, and so has Regan, maybe not as many as I have. And that's how we learn what the results of any action are. Every action has a consequence. This is just about helping us all to remember what the consequence of a certain feeding program will be. This is about making informed decisions about feeding your animals. It's about the energy behind every choice. This is designed just to give all of us a better understanding of horses' physiology, what makes a horse unique, what do they really need to eat for them to be the most balanced and healthy beings that they can possibly be. The biggest boo-boo that we see, especially on the West Coast, is a straight or high alfalfa diet. And when we go back east, when we go back to Kentucky and other parts of the country that I consider, quote, real horse country, unquote, they think we're not for even feeding alfalfa to our horses at all. I grew up feeding a lot of alfalfa to the horses. They're fat, they're shiny, they're beautiful on it. They're also walking water balloons. We know from studies in pH balance that the higher protein that we take in, the more water we have to retain to dilute the acid. Horses that are on a straight or high alfalfa diet will appear fatter, but they're actually just full of water. It's water retention to dilute the acid. We see a lot of horses that go on to a more grass hay-based diet. People will say, but my horse has lost so much weight. Your horse didn't lose weight. He dumped a whole lot of water. And very often the stall will just be really, really wet for a week or so after going on to a lower protein diet. A lot of consequences to a high alfalfa diet, diminished performance in general. The magnesium is suppressed by the high calcium in the alfalfa. Magnesium is a mineral that relaxes muscles, that calms anxiety, that helps the body convert the starches and the carbs in the diet into glucose, into glycogen, into muscle fuel. If you have a high calcium balance and lowered magnesium, you will simply have less ability for the muscles to do their work. You'll also have a bit of a whacked out horse, and that especially is going to impact the mares. When the mares cycle, the estrogen levels go up, that automatically suppresses magnesium, which is why we see so many mares that are just kind of whack jobs before and during their heat cycles. They're tight, they're swishy, they're twitchy. If the magnesium is adequate and the calcium is not too high in the diet, they will actually be much calmer and easy to work around. The horses do need the calcium. They need the alkalizing minerals, because if you have a prey animal that tends to be a bit on the edge emotionally anyway, and you don't have the alkalizing minerals in there that act as a buffer and kind of balance the nervous system, then you automatically have a really flighty, spooky horse. One of the side effects of too much protein is you burn up the alkalizing minerals to buffer the acid in the bloodstream. The animals will be just naturally tighter and twitchier. Regan can explain a little bit more about the pH balance that's required.
One of the big things I find the pH balance, the alfalfa is definitely alkaline forming, but it's the imbalance in the minerals. The biggest thing I've found in studying mammals is you never need any higher level of protein than when you're a newborn baby. A horse's protein is about 12% protein. So when they start getting over 12%, you start seeing more colic. You see all these pH imbalances starting to happen in their gut. And colic is a big thing that happens with a horse. But then you also start seeing this excess calcium, this decreased manganese, not enough phosphorus. And then you start developing joint problems like with osteolysis or arthritis starting in there. And that's the solution the body has to come up with. So a little bit of alfalfa is fine because of the alkalizing it, but when it gets over about 20%, I think sometimes some horses can handle 30%. The thing I look for on the level of protein on an animal is in the morning when I come out to see them, if they have moisture starting to happen in their nose, you see it running down their nose, or you see goobers in the corner of their eyes, it's all from too much protein. Another system that their body has used to try to get rid of the excess protein. And all of those horses that I've tested are all acidic happening. And that's when you're going to see chronic degenerative diseases starting to happen. Some of our Dynamite products have alfalfa in it, but it's at less than 1% or 0.5% of what their total diet is. And so you want to look at the total diet instead of saying, oh, it's alfalfa and it's bad, because alfalfa is not necessarily bad. It's just the amounts and the levels.
We see a lot of hypothyroid horses that are being fed alfalfa. The high calcium in alfalfa will occupy the iodine receptor sites. When horses become hypothyroid, initially you very often will see kind of wacky behavior, resistance to being groomed, cinchiness. In some breeds it manifests as weight gain, the crusty neck and the lethargy. In some of the hotter breeds, thoroughbreds in particular, will very often become hyperthyroid or overactive on the way to becoming hypothyroid. You just see a lot of goofball behavior and starting to get into some hormonal imbalances in that. Thumps will happen. Usually that is a calcium imbalance. Again, high protein is using up the alkalizing minerals. One phenomenon of the high calcium straight alfalfa diet is the calcium absorption and re-release in the body is governed by the parathyroid glands. So when you have all this extra calcium coming in from the alfalfa hay, then the body starts to shut down the absorption of calcium and the remobilization just as a defense mechanism. Then when the horse goes out and works and actually, needs the calcium to be put back into the bloodstream, the parathyroids are sort of caught with their pants down, so to speak. You know, they haven't been going to the gym and working out and keeping buff so they can do this. You get a horse that's either tied up or experiencing thumps, which is synchronous diaphragmatic flutter, where the muscles will actually contract in rhythm with the diaphragm, the heart muscle, and you get a horse that is in trouble. Kidney problems and scratches are another thing that we see with high calcium diet and high protein diet. Increased incidence of disease, and this goes back to the pH balance again. When you consider that parasites, insects, viruses, bacteria, all of these things come in to stress an unhealthy animal. If the pH is off and is not optimum, if the animal is too acidic, then they're a sitting duck for every little bug that comes along. Dr. William Swerczyk did a study years ago where he took two herds of horses and infected them both with Strangles bacteria. One herd was fed straight alfalfa, the other was on a grass hay diet. The alfalfa-fed horses got really sick with the Strangles and required some medication to get over it and actually became carriers of the disease. The grass-fed horses just kind of sailed through. They snotted and hacked for a while and got a little bit sick, but it wasn't any big deal. You actually are really opening your horse up for a disease process by feeding the straight alfalfa hay.
And remember, a disease process is nothing more than that body's solution. The good news about our body is it doesn't want to be sick, and the bad news is it doesn't care if it's healthy. It's programmed to survive. And so whatever you feed it is what the body has to do with it. So if it has to have kidney problems because it's getting rid of ammonia, if it couldn't get rid of the ammonia and develop kidney problems, it would die instantly. If it couldn't put that acid out into the skin and get rid of it, and then the bacteria feed on it to try and get rid of more of that, then you form scratches. So it's just a dis-ease. It's almost a hyphenated word if you look at the body as never doing anything wrong other than trying to survive.
Horses that are on high alfalfa diet will also be more colic prone, simply because there's not enough fiber in a straight alfalfa diet for their gut to be optimally healthy. They can't really have access to free choice alfalfa without turning into total blimp. And because horses are trickle feeders, they're designed by nature to be grazing animals. They're designed to have something in their stomachs at all times. When we feed them alfalfa, it's a little chunk in the morning. If they're lucky, a little chunk at noon and another little chunk at night. And there are hours and hours and hours a day that the gut is empty. This is a subject really close to my heart because I lost an incredible breeding stallion in 1980, back in my unaware days when I was still feeding straight alfalfa. Because he tended to be a pretty easy keeper, probably tending toward being a little hypothyroid, he got a little chunk in the morning and a little chunk at night. All day long and all night long, that gut was empty. What probably nowadays would have been a simple tummy ache or wouldn't have even happened with what I know about feeding horses turned into a fatal colic. Surgery at the vet school and a big horrendous hole in my life. That's another thing that is incredibly important to me is that people understand horses need to be fed like horses, which is fiber in front of them at all times. The developmental bone disease that happens, Regan touched on, the pH imbalance, the acidity requiring that the body leach the minerals out of the bone and out of the tissues in order for the blood to be buffered and balanced. You're setting the horse up for arthritis. You'll also get a lot of splints, oscillates, all kinds of calcification that can even happen in the tendons and ligaments. Wolf's Law says calcium goes to heat. So areas of heat and inflammation will attract the unusable calcium that's floating around in the body, and you'll get even microcalcification of tendons and soft tissue. Horses that will lose the elasticity, and they're more prone to bows. They're more prone to suspensory pulls and all sorts of things.
Cracked sesamoids, any of those types of things start happening.
Weakened bone structure, weakened tissue structure. We could go on and on about the alfalfa thing. I think that's giving you at least kind of the high points of it. Common boo-boo number two is sweet feed. And under this, I kind of lump all of the commercial feeds that are fortified and topped off with molasses. Where the whole sweet feed came into being, it's technology from the cattle industry, basically, as is alfalfa, to deliberately make an animal hypothyroid so they gain weight more quickly. People say, well, the sweet feed does such a great job. Look how quickly my horse bulked up and put on weight. Well, if they're retaining water and becoming hypothyroid, I hope to tell you they are going to put on weight. But because the grains are so devitalized and demineralized due to our agricultural system at this point, they're not very palatable to the horses anymore. So the feed companies 40, 50 years ago started dumping a lot of molasses on the grain in order to make it sweeter, make it more palatable to the animals. The problem is when you add molasses, you add moisture. So the commercial grade molasses out there that's used in the feeds has to be laced with preservatives and mold inhibitors. And these are things that have been proven, especially in ADD children, to contribute to hyperactivity, not to mention that, of course, they are toxins.
The other thing about molasses, even organic blackstrap molasses is something like 4,000 parts per million of fluoride. Well, fluoride will mimic iodine and block the uptake of iodine, and that's what causes the thyroid to start slowing down. I can't even remember what the numbers are for fluoride, but it's way higher. I mean, I think something like 200 parts per million is considered not toxic, and above that is toxic, and it's 4,000 parts per million on blackstrap molasses. And we know they're not using blackstrap organic molasses. They're using just a cheaper grade, but very high fluoride in it. The other thing they use the sweet feeds for is to make things stick together. It looks pleasing to our eye, but they can sweep everything in the bottom of the mill into the bend and do it. I remember my grandpa, when they first started coming out with the sweet feed, he just said, I don't want to pay you for your molasses. If I want molasses, I'll add it myself so I can see what I'm buying.
It does allow unethical feed companies to use broken and discolored grains, disguise what's actually going on with the grains. So I know there are a lot of good feed mills out there. There are a lot of them that ain't so good. It's not a totally uncommon practice for them to sweep the floors of the mills and just sweep everything into the vat. Sugar in and of itself is not something that horses would encounter much in the wild. If you just go back to how would a wild horse eat? Optimally healthy wild horse. There's not really a whole lot of sugar to be found out in areas where horses would normally range. So they're not physiologically adapted to even be sugar eaters, which is one of the reasons they do get a little goofball when they're on the sweet feeds. We had one gal that worked for a cutting trainer. The barn owner was insisting on feeding a number of her personal horses a commercial sweet feed, and she admitted to us on the QT that she was dumping half of the feed out in the manure pile and burying it, because if she fed the amount of sweet feed that the owner wanted them to have, they bucked her off. Her job was to warm up the horses to get them calmed down enough for the trainer to actually go cut a cow, which involved loping them for half an hour until they could get into their bodies enough to go to work. And she said, if I feed them the amount of feed that the owner thinks they're getting, they're dumping me on my butt. My body's worth more to me than that, so I don't feed them that amount. It takes 4 molecules of water to process each molecule of sugar. So again, on a sweet feed, the horses will be retaining a lot more water. They'll look like they're bulked up and building some muscle, but it actually isn't. Sugar also burns up B vitamins at a really alarming rate. B vitamins are very calming to the horse. Horses that are on a high sweet feed diet will be vitamin deficient.
Also, getting back onto the sugar thing, the muscle that energetically feeds into the pancreas, which has to do with blood sugar, is the longissimus dorsi, which is the back muscles. The more sweet feed you start feeding these horses, the more you see that muscle atrophy and the spine starting to stick up, and they don't have that roundness to go into self-carry. You can force them to start doing it, but their natural tendency will be to start sticking their butt out behind them and not engage. I've seen horses that have been on sweet feed that we've pulled off of the sweet feed start doing some exercises, and the muscles actually start building back up. We've taken horses that had 6-inch bump pads and be gone, but you know, they were being fed a high sweet feed diet.
Sugar also is very acid forming. We do see a lot of people, as Regan mentioned, that have horses that are losing top line. So their first reaction then is increase the grain. We've worked with people who are feeding maybe up to 20 pounds a day of a commercial sweet feed, and the horse is still thin. They're actually going backwards at that point. We found that horses aren't by nature even grain eaters. The less grain you can get by with feeding them, with balanced digestion, with the right kind of grain, if they get any at all, it takes mere cups. I mean, Potato Richardson is one of our distributors who's won the Tevis Cup 2 years out of the last 5. And if he feeds 3 or 4 pounds of our complete grain ration to his 100-mile endurance horses, that would be a lot. So it's a very common misconception that it needs oodles and oodles of grain for a race or endurance or event horse.
The other thing you'll see with high grain diets is you're going to need a lot more dental work from a precise dentist, because the grain is actually screwing up the bite of the horse even more.
Boo-boo number 3 is inorganic minerals. If they're on the label, that does not necessarily mean the minerals are getting into the horse. In order to be really available to the body, minerals need to go through the plant kingdom first. Classic example of this is if you think Kentucky Thoroughbred or Irish Thoroughbred, you think this incredible bone structure because it's limestone soil, which is calcium carbonate, which is very high calcium. The grass that's grown in soil like that will reach down into the soil, take the calcium, chelate it or bind it to protein molecules, and then when it goes into the horse, it's very readily absorbed. So then the feed companies, in their infinite wisdom, looked at that and said, well, if this limestone soil is making such wonderful grass, let's just put limestone or calcium carbonate in the feed. And it's not the same thing. Horses do have a bit of an ability to use some of the calcium carbonate, but it's not nearly as available as if it had gone through the grass kingdom first. Remember that this stuff really isn't taught in vet school. So if you go to your vet and say, what should I be feeding my horse? They aren't really up to speed yet on the fact that one mineral form is not the same as another. I had a gal call me one day that had a baby with epiphysitis, and she had gone to her vet and said, is this a nutritional imbalance? And he said, it is, and you need to get this baby on a good supplement. She said, well, what's a good supplement? And he said, well, just go to the feed store and read labels and get whatever has the most stuff in it. I'm certainly not saying that's typical of all veterinarians. Please understand that you're not necessarily dealing with somebody who's been trained in mineral nutrition when you're dealing with your veterinarians. All mineral forms are not created equal. A chelated mineral has had the electrical charge neutralized so that it doesn't combine with another mineral of an opposite valence and similar molecular weight to make an inorganic or unusable compound. Like iron and phosphate, if they're both in a totally inorganic form, they'll complex and you have iron and phosphorus in your manure pile but not getting into your horse. Not only is the electrical charge neutralized, but the molecular weight is low, which means the mineral molecule size is very, very small, which means it can get directly through the intestinal mucosa right into the bloodstream and go do its work. Purely inorganic minerals are maybe only 1 to 6% digestible, generally speaking. So it's very important that when you look at a supplement or a feed, that you see a full spectrum of amino acid chelated minerals. That may not be the same as a protonate. The protonate is a mineral that may be complexed with the protein, but isn't actually organically bound to the protein molecule. And what I've noticed being with Dynamite for 20 years is how many feed companies have come along behind Dynamite, which has been around since actually the 1940s. Citation won the Triple Crown on our original blood builder formula back in 1948. A lot of other companies have come along and said maybe there is something to these chelated minerals, but they will put in maybe a couple of minerals in a chelate form, but not the broad spectrum. You can create a huge imbalance by having only a few of the minerals in a chelate form and not all of them. What's really important is that you see a broad spectrum. It should say amino acid chelates of copper, zinc, manganese, magnesium, whatever. Another point is that horses aren't able to handle all of their minerals in a chelate form. In the wild, they would still go out and they would find an inorganic mineral lick. They would go eat some dirt. They would go eat some clay. They would go to this natural salt deposit. So they do have some ability to utilize minerals that are not 100% chelated. But in the grass that they eat, that would be a naturally chelated mineral, and the grass is 99.9% of their diet.
Let me ask you a question, Judy. If a lot of these that you see them adding into there are copper and zinc, those are the two most common ones, and what are some of the side effects of just having an amino acid chelate of copper and zinc?
What we've noticed a number of companies doing is adding chelated copper and zinc into their mix, because with chelated copper, you'll get a brilliant, beautiful coat and very intense color, and you'll get it very quickly. But if you add those two minerals and you don't also add chelated iron, chelated manganese, the other minerals that relate to the copper and zinc, you can actually create an iron deficiency anemia very, very quickly by adding chelated copper and not chelated irons. Everything needs to be in a balance. And whenever you start pulling out one mineral element, I think it was C.J. Fenzow, the noted soil scientist, who said if you grab hold of just one mineral or one element, you'll find you have the whole world by the tail. You can't separate just one thing out and say, I'm going to feed just this. And same thing with a lot of the iron tonics, some of the liquid irons. If they have just iron in them and not the other minerals that relate to making that iron available, you'll create a copper deficiency very quickly by feeding an iron tonic, and copper is essential to assimilate iron, so you're actually going backwards if you feed one of the just imbalanced supplements.
The other thing you see happening in the feed industry is you're seeing a lot of herbals come on the market, and they say this herbal is for this, and they're treating this herbal for this symptomatology. The bottom line with any food that's grown is it should taste sweet. If it doesn't taste sweet, it was grown in inefficient soil. So it needs to, what we used to always say is it needs to be recycled one time more. So put it back out on the field and give it another shot. But a lot of these herbals that we're buying aren't tasting sweet. They're not in the quality that the horse would even want. So then you have to dress it up to even get them to eat it in there. Your source of herbs are tough. And when you start feeding large animals and doing large business with there, your quality control can go down and down and down with it.
The reason that herbs work, the primary reason, is the mineral content of that particular herb. Whatever that herb is addressing is being addressed by, most of the time, by the mineral content of that herb. If it's not grown in really healthy soil where the minerals are present, it's just another plant, basically. If you really want to know what's going into your animal, the best thing to use is a supplement like ours that has a broad spectrum of amino acid chelated minerals. The body can use the mineral and flush the amount that it doesn't need. It doesn't complex and form insoluble compounds. It doesn't store in the body. And that's another key point with feeding inorganic minerals to horses, is that they'll store. They'll build up in the liver. They'll build up in the organs of elimination. A lot of people say, well, I can't feed my horse vitamins because the horse gets hyper and kind of crazy. It's a toxic response to an overload of unusable minerals that the body can't get rid of. Just because there's more on the label doesn't mean that more is getting into the animal. It doesn't mean that more is a good thing. We kind of have a mantra in Dynamite that less is more. If you can use just a tiny amount of the mineral to get the job done, then that's going to be much easier on the animal and much less expensive over the long run.
The other thing you will find as you start using utilizable minerals is you'll be able to cut down on the amount of feed. Because sometimes you don't cut down on the amount of feed and you go on to a better supplement and the horses get high from that. They're not actually getting high from the supplement. They're having more calories and they're not burning them up. Always remember, your body manufactures the enzymes that it needs, and if it has the more minerals to produce more enzymes for the digestion, there's better assimilation, so you don't need as much food.
Again, remember the minerals are extremely important to the animals. The alkalizing minerals, because of the prey animal syndrome and the ability to check out of the body at a moment's notice. The operative thing to remember about the minerals is it doesn't matter what's in the bucket if it's not getting into the horse. More is not necessarily better. It's the mineral form that is critical, and also the balance of minerals. There are a lot of really unbalanced supplements and feeds out there that don't contain a full spectrum of vitamins and minerals. Boo-boo number four, salt blocks and processed salt. Salt should either be pink or gray. It shouldn't be messed with by man. It should be just as it comes out of the ground or out of the sea, whichever your preference. And our Dynamite natural trace mineral salt is actually from an ancient seabed. It's cleaner than sea salt. The function of salt in the body is to attract water. If your salt is not attracting water, if it's had flow improvers added, salt is hygroscopic. So if you're feeding a salt to your horses that doesn't get wet when there's high humidity, then something's really wrong.
If your horse is actually just going down and eating and eating and eating and eating salt, one of two things are happening. Either the horse is getting something toxic in its body that it needs to attract the extra water to dilute the concentration of the poison that it's getting in, or it's looking for a mineral that might be in a very trace amount in the salts of the earth, the clay part of the salt, and there's not enough of it. And that's when we get into our free choices too. But a horse shouldn't just keep consuming high amounts of salt. There's either a toxin involved or there's a trace mineral deficiency happening there.
There's actually a phenomenon known as biological transmutation, which means that the positive ion minerals, sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, they can actually transmute one mineral into another in the body. If a horse is really, say, magnesium or calcium deficient and sodium is all you're giving it, they'll eat a whole lot of sodium because they're trying to balance their system out. High potassium in hay, some of the high potassium fertilizer, or again, if they're on a high alfalfa diet, they'll just blow through the salt because they're trying to balance out that high calcium level. They always have reasons for what they do. The other thing we do to horses is we give them salt blocks. Horses have really smooth tongues, like a dog. Probably you've all been licked by a horse, and it's very smooth and slimy. If you've ever had the pleasure of being licked by a cow, it really, really hurts. I mean, they just have little barbs on their tongues. Salt blocks were developed for cattle. They can get a lot of salt scraped off that block, where a horse will lick and lick and lick and lick and lick and finally maybe resort to chomping on the corner of it because they can't get enough by licking. They'll mess up their TMJ. They will screw up their teeth trying to chew on the salt block. And it's one of the worst things we can do to them. And then we do them even a further disservice by putting it in one of those nifty little salt block hangers that we put up on the wall at just the right angle so they get to tweak their atlas every time they need to lick the salt. usually they'll just give up trying to even eat the salt, and they'll just stay kind of imbalanced. So it's very important, we feel, that you feed a loose trace mineral, natural trace mineral salt that man hasn't messed with, that's dug out of the ground and put in a bucket. Salt should always be fed free choice. It shouldn't ever be force-fed. And I know a lot of people will do that to make the horse drink more or whatever. It's also a trick that a lot of the unethical feed companies use to make the horses appear to be gaining weight. Salt will be sometimes even the second or third ingredient. There'll be sodium chloride, you know, potassium chloride, all these different forms of salt. Regan has a little story about some horses that he worked on in California.
There was this paint farm down in California where we were doing a seminar, and they asked me to come and work on some of their horses, and they just looked like Jabba the Hutt moving around, you know. So we went out there, and I was working on them, and all of them, their kidneys were a little bit stressed out, and you could just see all this water weight. So I said, well, can I look at the supplement? The supplement had five of the first 10 ingredients. I think there was only 10 ingredients in the whole supplement, but five of them were salt. One of two things are happening there. Like Judy said, either they're giving them the salt to make them drink water, to make them appear that they're gaining weight that way. The other aha that I've had on that is if they didn't put the salt in it, the other stuff that they have in there would make the horse colic. And because the horse is drinking more water, it's diluting the concentration of the poison that they put in there to help flush it through the system a little faster. So that's the other reason I think they add salt into feed. They say they're adding salt for hydration. If everything's balanced, the horse should drink when it needs the water. The other thing about salt blocks that I wanted to cover is it's real easy for our horses to get toxins in. Horses are high mercury carriers just from eating off of the ground, close to the ground. They're going to pick up mercury and other heavy metals and things like that. Well, you cannot take salt and make it into a block without some type of binder, a glue of some sort, to make it there. So that's just one more toxin that the horse is going to be getting in because of us putting it in to make it more convenient. So I have a little saying, man can never improve on Mother Nature. He just makes it more convenient for himself.
A lot of times people will get in the habit of force feeding electrolytes too. Salt is really the major electrolyte. Most of the electrolyte formulas on the market are nothing more than white table salt with maybe, if they're lucky, a few other minerals added, or there'll be light salt, which is potassium chloride. Again, going back to biological transmutation, the way that most of the electrolyte formulas were arrived at is by taking sweat scrapings off the horse, analyzing it to see what's in there, and then putting that into an electrolyte formula. It's actually been proven that under heat and exercise stress, sodium will transmute to potassium, so sweat will be very high potassium. It doesn't mean that you want to put the potassium back into the horse. It means the potassium is a byproduct. It would be like formulating auto fuel by taking the exhaust from the car, analyzing it and saying, oh, this is it's carbon monoxide and whatever, and putting that back into the fuel tank. It's a byproduct of the internal combustion that's happening. A lot of the electrolyte formulas that are on the market are actually bass ackwards. You know, they're almost worse than doing nothing at all. The best thing still is to offer the horse access to free choice loose salt. About the only time you'd need an electrolyte is if the horses are sweating really hard, maybe 50 to 100 mile endurance ride, extreme stress. And we actually have our DynaSpark product that is performing incredibly well. It's organic blackstrap molasses, natural trace mineral salt, and a profile of some other naturally chelated minerals. It's just doing an incredible job. But you don't want to be forcing an electrolyte on horses on a routine basis. A lot of people just arbitrarily decide that if they're at a show or whatever, they're just putting it in the water, and that's the only water the horse is getting, so they're forced to drink it. A friend of mine actually tied up a really promising 2-year-old colt right before a big race. He was blowing him out a couple days before the race. On the way back to the barn, I noticed the colt getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter in one hip. By the time we got him back to cool him out, he was just flat tied up and required some drugs, which took him out of a 2-year-old race. So I finally grabbed the guy and said, tell me what you did that you didn't tell me about. And he said, well, he wasn't drinking so great, so I just threw a fistful of salt in his feed last night. Just don't be grabbing the white salt and just flinging it in their grain in a cavalier manner, you can really mess up their salt balance.
The other thing about electrolytes, they kind of use the same technologies that they do with sweet feeds. They have grain that the horse won't eat, so they put sugar on it. All electrolytes, what's either the first or second ingredient in it, is sugar. Because they know the horse will not eat it. If you just put it out there, they're just like, black, what's this? I'm not going to eat that. So they have to put sugar in there to entice the horse to even eat it. If a horse isn't drinking water, test the water. See if you would drink it. If you won't drink it, then why would they drink it? It's always kind of an easy test to do.
Which brings us right into boo-boo number 5, failure to support digestion and detoxification. One of the things that really compromises a horse's gut flora is chlorinated water. And a lot of us are unfortunate enough to live in the city limits where the water is heavily chlorinated and probably even has fluoride added. When you think chlorine goes in your swimming pool to sterilize it so the bacteria and algae doesn't grow, what happens if we drink or our animals drink chlorinated water? You've just sterilized the gut. If you're using a lot of chemical wormer or a daily wormer, if you're using antibiotics, all of those are things that will cause the horse's gut flora to die off. And they don't actually die off as a bit of a misnomer, but there's a pH balance that is essential for the proliferation of the beneficial gut bacteria. If that pH goes off, then the bad guys, the Salmonella, the E. coli, the Pseudomonas, some of those things start growing in their place, and then you end up with digestive problems or even a dead horse. So the horse's gut flora is of primary importance. One thing that we see as being the most important in our program is the DynaPro, the liquid probiotic. Probiotic means for life. It promotes the health of beneficial bacteria. There are a lot of probiotic formulas on the market that put beneficial bacteria in, and one of the most common questions we get with DynaPro is how many million colonies of live bacteria are in the DynaPro, to which we answer none, and then you get blank stares. Those bacteria are there if the pH is there and if they have the culture medium to feed them. So we use a fermentation extract of lactobacillus, and the metabolites are what goes into the DynaPro. So there's not actually anything live in the DynaPro, but it grows the good guys in the gut. The most important thing you can do for your animals is to support their digestion. And we tell people, if you'll only do one thing out of our program, one thing for your animals, give them DynaPro. Anytime there's stress particularly, I personally feed it every day. I order it by the 64-ounce jug, and the minute I open the last jug, I'm ordering the next one because I do not want to be even a day without it. That's probably the single most important thing you can do, especially if you're going to be worming, if you're going to be feeding commercial sweet feeds and not listening to anything else we say. If you take nothing from this but that, please, please give your horses some DynaPro. Anytime the weather's exceptionally hot or cold, if a big thunderstorm rolls through the valley, if anybody even looks at you with a slightly wrinkled eyebrow when you go to the barn, out comes the DynaPro bottle. That's amazingly important.
Yeah, very cheap insurance. I mean, it's incredible for colic, for indigestion. Talking a little bit more about indigestion, you see horses that will have gas. Well, if the gas doesn't smell bad, that's usually a problem with carbohydrate digestion. But if they have their manure really smells or the gas really smells, then that's their inability to digest protein. So they don't have enough stomach acid at that point. And that's when you'd probably want to use a little bit of added elixir with the DynaPro to help balance that out so they can digest their proteins a little better.
The other thing that happens just living in the 21st century is pretty toxic. But we've all also gotten into the habit of probably overdoing the chemical wormers, preservatives in the feeds, pesticides and herbicides on the crops that are grown, air pollution. We all get toxic. The organs of elimination get compromised and clogged up. You know, the liver is like the air filter. It's like the filter for the whole body. If the liver is compromised, digestion will be off, performance will be off, the animal will just be basically having a hard time. So some detox work is in order, at least maybe a few times a year. If you don't have any way to determine whether your horse is toxic or not, if you haven't been to a seminar where Regan teaches some of these points, the liver point, the kidney point, and all of that, Donna Donna Starita, who's a holistic vet in Oregon, who's a good friend of ours, recommends just a seasonal detox using Excel or Herbal Tonic 4 times a year. With each change of the season, you're kind of like clearing the slate and getting ready for the next season. You're clearing out whatever might have gone into that animal. And as you get your horses healthier and get them off a lot of the commercial programs, you'll find that they don't need to be detoxed nearly as often. I will always, always use at least a week of Excel at 1 teaspoon a day if I do find a need to do a chemical wormer. And that's another thing. If you can teach your friends, if they do choose to frequently worm chemically, at least give them the benefit of detoxing their liver when you get done with that worming. Using some Excel or some clay or some Herbal Tonic, even for a week or so, will go a big long way toward keeping those horses cleaned out a little bit.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do the clay or the Excel while you worm the horse, because it'll actually pick up some of the toxins out of the wormer. But the next day, 24 hours later, definitely get it rolling into there with extra DynaPro at that point.
And one thing that is becoming more common, too, is mycotoxins and aflatoxins and things in the feeds, because the crops are getting unhealthier, so the scrungies are taking over a lot of the grains. The ability of the horse to detox from all of that or tie up the toxins is really important. Dynamite pelleted grain rash does have a considerable amount of the clay in there, which is a montmorillonite clay, and that acts as a toxin binder. Even the Horse magazine has come out and acknowledged, though there's not, quote, scientific proof that the clays bind toxins, there seems to be more than an abundance of anecdotal information that it does, in fact, do that. In fact, on the bucket of the Strongia Daily Wormer, it cautions not to use Daily Wormer with any feeds containing sodium bentonite, which is clay, because it will bind to the charge of the toxin. The clay has a very strong negative charge. Chemical toxins, for the most part, have a very strong positive charge. So the clay gloms onto those chemical toxins and carries them through the horse to keep the toxins from building up in their system and their organs of elimination. This is all really important stuff, but do support their digestion on a regular basis, and especially if there's stress. Weaning time would be a huge example. Both mare and baby are freaking out. The first thing that happens is they get the squirts, and you've got a colicky baby or a colicky mare.
The other thing to really remember in detoxifying and supporting digestion is water. Water is their biggest single nutrient that they consume. If the water supply that they're getting is not one that you would drink yourself at a 7-gallon a day or 15-gallon a day level, do something. Get a filter. Change your water. We had one lady we weren't getting results on with the horse, and we were trying to do it over the phone, and the horse was just eating and eating and eating the free choices up, just going through everything, and then go out and eat more dirt. So we went down to LA and we finally saw the horse, and I said, "How's your water?" And she said, "Oh, it's excellent. We have a water softener." If you've ever drank in water from softener, it's not real pleasant water. Plus, it will just leach the minerals right out of you, just like it's supposed to do out of your hard water from your well. So always ask the person about, what's your water supply like? And don't accept, oh, it's great. Because it could be water softened. It could be contaminated. It could be lots of different things. And if it happens to be high in iron, it's going to suppress copper or zinc, or any of those minerals can start suppressing the other ones.
Well, you figure that water weighs right around 9 pounds per gallon. If a horse drinks 10 gallons of water a day, that's 90 pounds. So water is, in fact, the major nutrient. If it's not good water, then they're in trouble. A lot of the top race horses, they actually carry their own water with them, or they'll feed them distilled water or bottled water.
Secretariat was only given distilled water through his whole racing career.
It's that important. And we see a lot of horses at the racetracks. Usually the tracks are within the municipality or within the county, and the water is chlorinated. They just really don't like that water. You take them home to the training farm for a week and they'll drink twice as much water. One thing you can do if you are forced to use chlorinated water, the chlorine will gas off in about 24 hours, just like it does out of your swimming pool. So we tell people, get a big muck bucket, put it outside the stall, fill it up, and then dip their stall water bucket out of that. Let it sit for 24 hours and just keep rotating the water. Don't just go along with the hose and fill up the bucket. Because I've seen horses come along to take a drink, and you fill it up with chlorinated water, and they'll start to drink, and they'll just recoil from it, just like they've been shocked because the chlorine smell is so strong. One of our distributors put a chlorine filter in her barn and said instantly the water consumption doubled. starting that day. So you'll find horses that they'll drink enough water to stay alive, but they won't drink enough water to be truly healthy. Old traditions that die hard is boo-boo number 6. The things that we were taught were good things for horses are some of the worst things that we can do for them, and we've all done them. Bran is one of the things that, back in the last century or the one before last, it probably was a fairly decent food. But at this point, you're getting a lot of the toxins from the wheat in there. You're getting the outer layer of the kernel. It's very, very high phosphorus, so if people are feeding grass hay, some oats or whatever, some grain, and a bran mash, they will be so calcium deficient. And this actually includes rice bran too. We see a lot of people now that are feeding rice bran because they want more fat in the horses or whatever, and yet they're having hoof problems. Shelly feet, brittle feet, feet that are kind of falling apart. Bran is extremely high in phosphorus, which imbalances the calcium. It's also very high in phytate, or phytic acid, which acts to tie up calcium. So we just have a rule of thumb. If it's a bad-footed horse, you don't want to be feeding that horse bran. Bran is not a laxative. Bran is a regulator or an intestinal irritant. The reason that it causes a looser stool and speeds up the digestive process is the body's saying, yikes, get this out of here. I have the visualization of one of those fuller brushes that you use to scrub out bottles. And when the bran gets in there, it's just kind of going rick, 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 and the gut's going, yipes, eject, eject. So you're not really particularly doing your horse a favor putting the bran in there. It's much better to address digestion with the DynaPro or a good probiotic and keep it balanced out that way.
A lot of times, like with the rice bran, they use the bran as just a carrier for oils or something like that. Don't be fooled by dressing it up.
Well, one of the cautions on rice bran, too, is that Consumer Reports has listed rice as one of the crops that you definitely, or one of the foods that you definitely want to eat only organic, because it's one of the most heavily chemicalized crops just because of the way it's grown. And again, the toxins are going to be concentrated in that outer kernel in the bran layers. The rice bran is a byproduct of the rice industry. Why do you want to be feeding your horse a byproduct? You're paying a huge price, compromise price, to put the rice bran in just to get the fat, because there are healthier ways to get the fat into the horse. Beet pulp is another huge one. A lot of people are feeding the beet pulp as a carrier for supplements and things. It's been very commonly used to put weight on older horses because it does cause them to retain water. There's still a certain amount of sugar left in that beet pulp, and we mentioned that it takes 4 water molecules to process each sugar molecule. It does swell up. It does cause the horse to retain some water, but you're not putting on good, healthy muscle tissue weight.
They used to go through and mow the top of the beets off before they'd harvest, and now they just use a defoliant like Agent Orange or something similar to that that kills the tops of the beet, and then they go in and harvest it. So you're getting those toxins into the beet too. Again, I'm sure they're not using organic sugar beets.
They use lots of chemicals. They use herbicides, atrazine, and things like between the rows to keep the grasses out of the fields. As Regan said, they use chemical defoliants to make the tops die back before they harvest. Toxins are stored in the pulp, just like they are in carrot. If you're extracting, making carrot juice, the toxins are concentrated in the pulp if it's not an organic carrot. Why feed a horse a byproduct anyway? If digestion is balanced, if they have the fiber and the grass hay that they need, you won't need to worry about weight. More than anything, you'll have horses that you maybe have to keep cutting back on their food a little bit. I've got horses in their mid-20s that are just as round and dappled. They look like 5-year-olds on this program. Corn oil, this is like a huge one. Corn oil has historically been fed for coat condition and to put on weight. The problem with that is horses don't have gallbladders.
If horses did have gallbladders, we probably wouldn't have horses. Basically, about that simple. Your gallbladder is a storage for your liver bile. When you have a high amount of concentrated fat coming into your body, then your gallbladder will dump the bile to help emulsify the fat. Liver bile is a pH of 7.2 to 8.4, and that's what the pancreas can work at. Gallbladder bile can be 4.5 to 8.4. So if a horse is being fed high amount of grain and he's got a gallbladder and you dump all that oil in there and his pH is 4.5 or 5, the pancreas can't work. He's going to gas colic right there. Boom. Just like that. Now, since the horse doesn't have the gallbladder, the liver bile is always dumping out at 7.2 to 8.4 so the pancreas can work. But now what's happening is you don't get enough bile to help emulsify the fat. So then it goes into the receptor sites for your vitamin A, your vitamin D, your vitamin E, and vitamin K, your fat-soluble vitamins. And so then you get a deficiency of the vitamin A, the vitamin D, the E, and the K, because the fat is taking up the receptor sites. Judy had an experience with a vet that explained it pretty well in a simplistic form.
It was actually a human doctor, but we were bashing this issue around one day, and he said, okay, I'm going to distill it down to the simplest analogy that I can. You've got boat docks lined up along the river. You've got the fat boats coming along. The fat-soluble vitamin boats are coming along. If the fat boats are already docked at the dock, the fat-soluble vitamin boats don't have any place to dock. That's about as simple as you can make it. If you're inhibiting the absorption of the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin A and D are super important for the absorption of calcium. Vitamin E is a major antioxidant, really important for the immune system. Vitamin K is vital for blood clotting. Yet you go to the racetrack and you'll see the big giant Costco jugs of corn oil that every horse is getting a big old glug every day. They've got degenerative joint disease, they're having stress fractures, you know, they're shin bucking, and they're bleeders. They're getting the fat into them, but at what price? Horses, if their digestion is balanced, if their hindgut is working properly, i.e. DynaPro, a good probiotic, they make their own volatile fatty acids in the hindgut. You will have coats you can see your face in if the horse is digesting properly and making their own fatty acids. Again, they take care of this stuff themselves. You don't need to do it from the outside. The only reason corn oil gives them a shiny coat is because they don't have a gallbladder, they're just spewing out that oily residue through their skin as a way of getting rid of it. And the horses will feel icky and kind of greasy. They're sticky. It's not that nice, clean, beautiful shine. It's just oily gunk that's sitting on the surface of their skin. Like a person who's had their gallbladder removed will have kind of a waxy, oily skin because they're not processing the fat. Regan made a great comment earlier about where horses would actually get their fat in nature.
I was talking about seasonal. I always try to relate how this horse or the animal would exist in the seasons of where it lives. And in the spring of the year, when the grasses are just starting to pop out of the ground, they're very high protein. And when I had a broodmare farm in Kentucky, what we would do to stimulate ovulation in these horses, because we wanted them all bred in February, is we'd increase their protein slightly to cause them to start coming into hormonal cycle. We didn't use the lights and all those different things. And that's what happens in nature. They start eating the young grasses and their higher protein. And that's also when the horses need to be more alert, because there's wolves or coyotes around and they have newborns. The extra protein would keep them on alert a little bit more and more sympathetic dominant. As the year goes on and the grasses start getting a little taller, the protein level starts going down and the carbohydrate level starts coming up, and the foal is getting stronger and being able to run and keep up with the herd more, so they don't need that higher protein. And then as the fall of the year starts to come and the seeds start to head out, where they get their fats is in the seed. And so a lot of times you'll see horses just going and eating the tops of the grasses off, and I feel those are the horses that needed the extra fat for whatever reason. That's the only place that a horse would get fat in its diet.
So the obvious question would be, if you're not feeding oils to horses, how do they get the fat, especially if they're not out on nice summer pasture where they can get the seed heads? Remember, the problem with feeding the oil to the horses is that it is a fractionated product, meaning it's separated from the protein and the enzymes and everything that makes it really utilizable. We have a great product called High Energy Supplement Pellet, which is organic whole extruded soybeans. It's got all of the fat, all of the enzymes, everything right there in the same form that a horse would assimilate fats in nature. It's a great way to supplement the fats and keep everything in balance. High Energy Supplement Pellets, HES. And it's actually a component of our pelleted grain ration, but it's also a feed that you can buy separately. You only feed mere ounces or even up to a cup or so a day in order to supplement the protein and the fat level in a really healthy manner. It is an organic soybean, so you're sure that you don't have all the gook in it. which leads us to the next boo-boo, which is soybean and linseed meal. Because of the fact that most of the soybeans now, unless they're organic, like the source we use, 99% of all soybeans are genetically modified. They're also one of the most highly sprayed and pesticided crops that there is out there. When you take a contaminated, genetically modified soybean, then it runs through a process where they use chemical solvents, namely hexane, which is a petroleum distillate, to separate the oil out to make soybean oil for people. The leftover meal is what actually goes into the horse feeds. It's about 45% protein. It's devoid of the fat and the oil that make the protein healthier and put it in a more buffered form. Plus, you've got all of the toxins that are left over. People will say, my dog's allergic to soy, my horse is allergic to soy. It's probably not the soy they're allergic to. They're allergic to that form of soy, which is not a healthy form. Linseed meal is another one. Flax has historically been fed for coat condition. It can be high in cyanide if it's grown under cold weather conditions. And the only way that you can neutralize the compounds that are in the linseed so that it's not as toxic to the animal is to boil the flax for half an hour. I don't know very many people that know that. They just grab the flax out of the bag and fling it in the ration. But you need to take it in the house, put it in a pan of water, and boil it till it kind of looks like jello. And then if you're going to feed it, it's at least a safer way to feed it. We've found with people as well as with animals that the linseed tends to act as a bit of a thyroid inhibitor.
Your thyroid is your basal metabolism. So what I have found with linseed or cold-pressed flaxseed oil, after long extended periods of use of it, their basal metabolism starts to go down, down, down. And so it's kind of like having an artificial fuel, I believe, into the body. The thyroid doesn't think it needs to increase its basal metabolism, and then it starts to shut down from that point.
So we do see a lot of mares especially that are on a ration that has linseed as the protein source. They will tend to get a little hypothyroid. And again, that's feeding linseed cake. Regan grew up on a feedlot. That's one of the ways to fatten the cattle, to make them deliberately hypothyroid so they get fatter and get to market a little bit quicker. So remember that we're feeding horses here. Another kind of mantra that we have is horses are not cows. You know, don't feed them like cows. Feed them like horses.
My grandpa always said, you can't teach a cattleman how to feed a horse. You know, we always fed our horses totally different. We always fed them grass, and they were mostly out on pasture from April through October anyway. We had 4 acres of grass hay that we raised for our horses only, but the rest of it was alfalfa for the cattle.
So one other common feeding boo-boo is feeding oats. Many horses are really affected by an alkaloid in oats. It's called avenin. And you've all heard the term sowing your wild oats, which is like really kind of rank behavior, you know, goofball behavior. Avenin stimulates the central nervous system. And there's a reason that it's a very common and accepted food for racehorses. It's very stimulatory. But a lot of horses just really go all whopper-jawed when they get oats. They get pretty crazy. And I hear people say, well, I only give him oats, you know, not sweet feed or whatever. I just give him some oats, and he just can't tolerate grain. There are so many horses that have an allergy or a reaction to the oats that do way better on just some rolled barley or some rolled barley and cracked corn. If you have a horse that seems on the hyper side and the minerals are balanced and all of that, try switching from the plain oats and either ideally do our pelleted grain ration or do just some barley and some corn, and you'll probably have a bit different horse. We have found a lot of horses that really don't even need grain. We have our TNT, which combines a cup of the high-energy supplement pellet, an ounce of regular dynamite, an ounce of our Easy Boy, which is the magnesium B vitamin supplement, has nearly a full ounce of our Free and Easy for joint support, has half an ounce of Ismine for over 60 different chelated trace minerals, and it has half teaspoon of Excel, which helps keep the liver and kidneys detoxed. That's all in one product. You feed about a cup and a third a day to the average horse, and we're finding a lot of horses out there are getting by beautifully on that and not even needing any grain. Unless they're working really, really hard, they may not need the extra calories and carbs that come with the grain. Check out the oats thing. If you have a horse that does act a little bit hyper, that might be one thing to consider. Boo-boo number 7 is ignoring the obvious. What's your horse trying to tell you? This is where the whole concept of free choicing comes in.
Horses are always trying to survive. They'll do whatever it takes to survive, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's a good system, but that's what they have available. So if you see your horses starting to eat pine wood, they're usually lacking phosphorus. So if you supply them with calcium phosphorus free choice, I've never seen them not stop chewing wood. It's not that they like to chew wood. They need to chew wood because they need the phosphorus to help balance the calcium in it. If they're licking on the gate, it's not necessarily they like to lick on the gate. It probably doesn't even taste good. But they're looking maybe for zinc. They're always looking for something. If the horse is eating dirt, he's looking for something in there. He either wants to detoxify or he's looking for some trace elements. So supplying a wide range of the free choices, the 2-to-1, the 1-to-1, the Ismine, NTM salt, usually will address all of those problems unless you've got the horse on soft water or something like that, by a water softener, because that's going to leach more minerals out of there. So anything the horse does, licking on the gate, eating paint, you come up to the horse and he just starts licking and licking and licking you and licking you, he's probably lacking salt in his diet. Say, well, he's got a salt block. He probably doesn't like what's in the salt block. So it's very interesting to just observe him and always go in with this mindset, why is he doing this? And no, he's not doing it because he likes it. They don't like chewing on wood. They don't like licking gates. They're doing it because they're lacking something, and there's a little bit of it in there. They're trying to get some of it out.
Oftentimes, the tail or mane-eating thing will be parasitism because the hair is very high in silica, and that acts as a kind of natural parasite control. They can also transmute the silica in the hair into calcium. So I always tell people, if you're buying babies off a broodmare farm, go look at the mares. And if they all have tails a foot long that never grow back from year to year, you probably don't want to be buying babies off that farm. It's what I've observed over the years, 20 years of raising babies on dynamite. They can be confined with the mare, and they won't eat her mane and tail. My mares have ground-sweeping tails and manes, and I've had them get into the free choices as early as a day of age. I've had them be in there licking away on the 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 free choice. So put the mineral feeders down low enough that the babies can get to them too. Don't just put muzzles on them or paint gooky stuff on the stall walls to keep them from eating. Say, okay, I'm missing something here. One other reason that they will chew on wood is if they need really good dental work, they need their incisors filed down. They will run their teeth up and down the walls. They'll chew like crazy on the fences because you're not addressing their dental needs. They've always got reasons for what they do. They're not just doing it to be obnoxious and aggravating. Don't ignore that. I've also had horses that will poop in their water when they need their teeth done. And I've never seen it fail that when you address the teeth, they quit pooping in their water. What they're trying to do is reestablish gut flora because they're not able to chew properly and really get good digestion. They'll just back up and poop in the water bucket. Just like a newborn foal will eat the mare's manure, or you'll see horses that are under gut stress out eating their own manure or the manure from other horses. They're wanting to get the digestive enzymes back in there. That's a pretty graphic demonstration. Something needs to happen here.
I've just seen using even DynaPro on those horses that poop. They'll stop pooping in their water. The person doesn't reorder the DynaPro, and he says, well, he's back pooping. And I said, well, yeah, but it's been 3 months since you had any DynaPro. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so we give them back on the DynaPro, and they stop. But they were on chlorinated water is what the problem was. So shitty water was better than chlorinated water.
And the other thing that's important is to understand that you need to feed the free choice minerals, truly free choice. And there are times when they will just motor through them and you think, I'm going to go broke doing this. We've had brood mares that would eat maybe 75 pounds of 2-to-1 in a 2 or 3 month period, which is the calcium phosphorus balancer. Until they get caught up, they're not going to be caught up. And if you just dole it out to them in small amounts, they're not going to be able to plug that hole. And the analogy I use is if you have a leaky bucket, it has a little hole in the bottom, and you're trying to fill it up. If you just dribble the water in with the hose barely on, it runs out as fast as you're putting it in. If you turn that hose on full blast, you fill up the bucket, and then a trickle will keep it full. It will compensate for the amount that's going out. But if you don't get it full first, it will never fill up if you're just trickling it in. So that's a real key concept, that if you're participating in this program, really, really let them have the minerals free choice. I promise you they will not keep eating them at that level. I have 15 horses, and if I go through a bucket of 1-to-1 and 2-to-1 over several years, that's a lot.
The other concept from Jim Zamzow, the founder of this company, is the barrel stay theory, the old oak barrel. It's all about balance again. And if you have one barrel stay that's only halfway up the barrel, you can never get any more minerals into the horse than what that limiting factor is. By bioavailably providing all of the minerals, you can bring all of the stays up to their maximum potential so you can get to that 100% maximum. But your basic limiting one, if you're just chelating a few here and there or just trying to short the horse out, because it might be just 10, might be the lacking one, and that's in the free choices or the trace elements.
The other thing that we notice is the consumption of the free choices will change with the weather, with parasite stress. If the weather suddenly turns cold, they'll just start motoring through the 2-to-1 calcium supplement. Or if they're having a parasite challenge, they'll start motoring through it. So they really do know when they need it, and we need to honor that. Their instinct is far more powerful than our intellect of what they need. And if we will just honor that part of them, they get much healthier. Boo-boo number 8 is feeding really icky things. On this list are ethoxyquin, BHA, BHT, urea, animal fat. If you start reading labels of commercial feeds and supplements, if you can't pronounce it, you probably don't want to feed it. Good food has simple names like oat, carrot. If it's 9 syllables of unpronounceable stuff, why do you want it going into your animal? Ethoxyquin is actually one that's been in dog foods for a long time. It's used to stabilize fat, but it was mainly developed by Monsanto as a rubber stabilizer. And thank God we have it, or we wouldn't be driving down the road on tires. Because it acts as a fat stabilizer, it's ended up in animal foods. It's been implicated by Dr. Gene Dodd, who's the leading veterinary researcher in ethoxyquin, in cancer, reproductive problems, allergies, all sorts of things in dogs, and it's now ending up to be more and more prevalent in our horse feeds as we've gotten into the higher fat horse feeds that, you know, they put all this oil and everything in there and then they have to stabilize it so it doesn't go rancid. Look for ethoxyquin on the label. BHA and BHT are butylated hydroxytoluene and butylated hydroxyanisole. All three of those are outlawed in Europe. They're not used in the European countries at all, ethoxyquin, BHA, and BHT. The clinker in this country is that unless the final feed manufacturer adds them to the mix, they don't have to be on the label. So if they buy animal fat pre-preserved with ethoxyquin, they don't need to list ethoxyquin on their label. So it's really important that you know that you're dealing with an ethical feed company that is committed to not putting this stuff into the animals. Truly, it's just a defense mechanism for the commercial feed companies. They need a feed that can sit in somebody's store for 2 years if it doesn't turn over quickly and not go rancid, because they don't want a lawsuit on their hands from moldy or rancid feed. That feed is also totally devoid of enzymes. It's full of the toxic preservatives. So you've got fats and oils, you've got really high protein, you've got tons of sugar and molasses, lots of preservatives. Yes, they will fatten a horse, but will they make the horse healthy? No, they probably won't make the horse optimally healthy. Again, this depends on the energetic level of your choices for yourself and your animals. What level of performance do you want? What level of health do you aspire to for you and your animals? And then you make that corresponding choice. Urea is non-protein nitrogen. It is present in a lot of cattle feeds, but you have to be a ruminant in order for it not to be a toxin. So it's very scary when you see people that will feed like a dairy 14 or something like that to their horses because it's a cheap feed. I had a gal call me one time years ago, had an Arab stallion that was basically dying of cancer. And I said, what are you feeding him? Well, he had been on straight alfalfa and a dairy 14. Super high protein, leaching alkalizing minerals, full of urea and sugar. She had spent years giving this horse cancer basically and then was wondering what was going on with this animal's.
I always love it when people say, well, it couldn't be that because I've been doing that for years. You know, I had this horse, they said, have you ever heard of kidney failure in a horse? And I said, yes. Did you just worm the horse or anything? And they said, yeah, we just double wormed it with ivermectin, 2 tubes of ivermectin. And I said, well, that would be enough to make the kidney. Oh, it couldn't be that because we've been doing that for 3 years now.
Oh,
the straw that broke the camel's back, maybe?
Ever hear of cumulative stress? When we took the tour of the dynamite mills, one thing that Jim stressed is he does not even allow urea on the premises of our mill, just to avoid any possibility that somebody accidentally dumps something in the horse feed. It's not even there. What goes on around the feed mills is of vital importance, too. Are they making medicated feeds for poultry and swine and that kind of thing? My foundation mare years ago produced a bunch of national champions for me, just an amazing broodmare. She foundered big time a month before foaling because the mill accidentally gave me a swine ration instead of our pelleted grain that we were having mixed at the time. This is way before my dynamite days. I brought home a ton of the feed, opened it up, and it was a little bit different color than usual, but it could vary because it had some alfalfa meal in it, and it could vary with the greenness of the alfalfa. So I fed that night. The next morning, everybody else was fine, and she was on the ground, and her feet were just hotter than a frying pan. And we got her through it, but she foaled almost a month early. We nearly lost her to laminitis because of probably the antibiotics and things that were in that swine rations. You don't want to take a chance on cross-contamination. If they've just run a big old run of pig or chicken feed, and then yours is the first bag of horse feed that comes through, and there's still that residue in there, that can be enough to push them right over the edge. A lot of the mills are fumigated with methyl mercury, malathion, things like that. So even if the grain isn't contaminated enough when the feed companies buy it, by the time they get done messing with it, we've seen them out in the back storage rooms of feed stores with the little hand sprayer spraying malathion right on the feed bags, the woven or paper bags. You don't think that gets into the feed? All of these things, again, are about choices and diminishing the amount of icky things that come in contact with your horse feed. And one thing going along with that, kind of flashing back to the detox for a minute, Regan had a really graphic example of how just detoxing a horse can really impact the performance.
Well, this was several years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. There was a 2-year-old filly that was doing fairly good at Emerald Downs, and it was starting to tie up. And they did the selenium shots and the DMG, and they were doing all these different things to try and hanging jugs on the horse to try and prevent it from tying up. And it would tie up on just going on the walker. I finally got asked to look at the horse, and the liver was really hinky. I think it was herbal tonic, and I just said, let's put the horse on herbal tonic and see what happens. So we took it off everything and just put it on corn oats and barley, dry corn oats and barley, and the herbal tonic. And after 1 week, the horse was still tying up, and he was like, this isn't working. I said, keep giving it some time. At 2 weeks, the horse was doing good and was back galloping. At 3 weeks, he entered the horse in an allowance race. It won. 2 weeks later, it won a $50,000 stakes race. They shipped it to Bay Meadows, and it won another $50,000 stakes race. So he was so excited. He wanted to put all of his horses on herbal tonic at the time. You know, he didn't even let the whole process go through. But, he didn't actually understand what was happening about the detoxing. But a lot of times, to me, tying up is no more than sticking a potato in your exhaust pipe. The lactic acid could not get flushed out through the lymphatic system, so the muscles just cramp. And what better way of not producing any more lactic acid than stop moving? So this horse couldn't even walk to the walker and walk around once. And it was just blocked up. But they were trying to feed it from the other way, increase the oxygen, you know, the selenium helps with tight muscles, magnesium, all these different things. And it was just a matter of getting the eliminating organs working.
Because there are so many icky things in the feeds and in the environment, a lot of times you'll get further if you just back up and clean the slate and do a detox, do herbal tonic, do Excel, do some clay, whatever, instead of putting more and more and more stuff into the horse, because people will call us with like these laundry lists of things that they're feeding the horses to try to balance them out. Or I've seen programs where they're trying to detox, they're trying to support the adrenals, they're trying to build this and fix that. And there's a list of 15 things that they've found maybe through hair analysis or something like that. And to me, it's a fundamental misunderstanding that if you first of all get the liver working and get the horse digesting and get the liver clear, the whole picture is going to change. So how can you possibly address all of those things all at one time? And Regan's got a great analogy for overdoing it, which is you take the old style manual typewriter that wasn't even an electric and you go bam on a whole bunch of keys all at once and you get this big scruzzle of locked up keys and you can't type, you can't do anything. You can either take a sledgehammer to it and then you can't type at all, or you can take your little fingernail and you can gently start pulling one key loose at a time, and then you'll get to a point where they'll all suddenly unlock and go bloop back into place, and then you've got a functional body again. It goes back to the less is more thing, and instead of doing more, just back up, Jim will say, take everything away. Just do good grass, hay, and water for 30 days if you don't do anything else, and support with DynaPro. Let the body sort it out instead of doing more. And that's been a thing I've noticed since I've been with Dynamite. When I started out, people were saying, oh, you know, they just need oats and good hay and water, and they don't need supplements. Now it's gone way, the pendulum swing to the other extreme. There's all these supplement companies, and people are feeding their horses gazillions of dollars a day worth of supplements, and they're actually overdoing it. So you need to get back to just a simple basic program. Good grass, hay raised as organically as possible, a good clean grain without a lot of sugars and junk in it, address digestion, give them the free choices, and it gets to be just this very simple basic program, which even though our products may look expensive at first blush, if you just look at the price tag, be a business person and look at the bottom line of what it's costing you to keep and feed your animals in terms of not having the problems with them. I mean, for myself personally, being in horses professionally since the 60s, I just look back in horror sometimes at some of the things I did. And losing that stallion, I mean, that was a huge owie. But, you know, mares that would abort after ivermectin wormer, all of the things, retained placentas, hoof problems, all of these things that you take as being just, they're going to happen on a horse farm, right? You know what? They don't happen anymore. They just don't. Everybody's out there healthy and happy and sane and sound. And I look back on training problems that I had, horses that were kind of whack jobs, and realize that one needed some more calcium. That one really could have used magnesium. That one was a nut job on alfalfa hay. And I guess it's kind of my soapbox to keep horses from suffering and being abused. And so much of what we call death by lunging, you know, you go to the hunter shows or whatever, and people, the grooms are out there at 4 a.m. with the horses going around and around and around and around.
It just causes them to start breaking down. We have a racehorse trainer back in Virginia that she used to think that all horses just had a limited number of races in them, and that was it. Eventually, they're going to get to that number, and they're going to break down and not be able to run anymore. And now, since she's been on the Dynamite program, she says, I think these horses could run to forever. They just don't seem to break down. Every time they go out there, they're going to hurt themselves a little bit. Just building muscles, going to the gym to work out, you're going to break down some muscles and some ligaments and tendons and stuff. But if you have the hardware store inside of you and the minerals present to do the rebuilding, you build it, you break it down, and then you build it back up, and it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. That's what happens with these horses.
We had an unsolicited testimonial a number of years ago from a racehorse trainer in Maryland who had a 9-year-old gelding who had had, I think, over 100 career starts, had just earned just a hair over $500,000 in his last race. He was only on Dynamite Plus. That's the only one of our products he was using. And this horse was just like the Energizer Bunny, just going and going and going and going. And contrast that to the racing industry in general, where they're lucky if they make it even to their 3-year-old year. I mean, you watch the Breeders' Cup and a horse breaks down right in front of God and everybody. It's heartbreaking to see that kind of thing that happens in the horse industry, and people just think it's a normal function, acceptable level of loss, and I don't feel that way.
When I first got involved with horse racing, which was 1969, and you'd go to the look at the racing form, it was not unusual to see most of the horses having over 100 starts or 130 starts or 140 starts. Now, today, you go to the races and you look at a racing form, and a horse that's got 35, 40 starts, that's an old campaigner. You always hear people say, oh, we're running our horses too young and doing all. They've been doing that since the 1800s. I think Man of War had 17 starts as a 2-year-old, and he retired sound.
Citation not only won the Triple Crown, he raced in races between each race in the Triple Crown. Or any more, they're lucky if they get them even to the second race of the Triple Crown, let alone through the whole thing, let alone win it, let alone run races leading up to and between the Triple Crown races. There was an article in one of the newspapers years ago about racehorses just aren't what they used to be, and holding Citation up as an example. That'd be a Dynamite horse. The thing is, a lot of people haven't heard of Dynamite products, which is a huge compliment to the products, in that people that are at the highest levels of competition and winning would rather you not know that they're using Dynamite products. Because if they go out and win millions of dollars on the racing circuit or whatever, why do they want you to know what they're actually doing?
We've had people buy the product, take it out of the buckets, throw the buckets away, paint the buckets black. Even in the dog industry, we've had the top show handlers tell people, oh, I tried that dynamite stuff. That was the most horrible stuff. My dog blew coat. What do you think they're feeding? They just don't want anybody else to think that it's any good. So basically, we've had people over the years, one mini breeder that I can think of in particular, her first year on dynamite products, she said she saved $5,000 in vet bills over her usual average because the minis are so colic prone. And just feeding the DynaPro, which costs pennies a day, had literally saved her thousands and thousands of dollars over the course of the year. We have a full program of products for humans, for dogs, for cats, for soil, and really a program that will support anything that's alive on the planet. We do just really aim for people who aspire to the optimum level of health at all levels. We've had people that, you know, want to argue the point that might cost more initially to feed the dynamite products, but what's your bottom line cost if you start to look at the overall cost of maintaining your animals? I have a question here that one gal just brought up about soy being a thyroid inhibitor because we do have soy in our HES pellets. We touched on the fact that 99.9999% of the soy that's out there now is genetically modified. It's also very heavily pesticided and herbicided. So there's a huge correlation between toxins in the body and thyroid function. In fact, one of the reasons that so many horses will become hypothyroid if they're wormed a lot is the liver becomes so toxic that the conversion of the thyroid hormone from T4 to T3, which is the active form and which happens in the liver's not able to do it. They will eventually become hypothyroid because they're not getting the full production and use of the thyroid hormone. So to me, at least that's my opinion, and we'll see what Regan thinks, is it's about the form of soy that's out there. It's not about soy inherently being a thyroid inhibitor.
Exactly correct. The body's choice at that point is for survival. So if it's getting so much poison in or such a genetically manipulated food in that it can't survive on it, the only thing it can do is slow down its process. So the BMR starts to go down, and then the liver function ties into all of that.
This is one of the big things I've learned from Jim over the years, is back off and go, is it about soy and they're just lumping everything together, or is it about what's being done to the soy? That, to me, is the answer.
We have a question here. TNT versus Complete. Both or just one for horses at the track, or what other products? TNT is a product that Judy and I actually came up with as our 20-year anniversary product, and it's just turned into an incredible product. So the verdict can still be out on that, but if you need grains for caloric value. So if the horse is putting out a lot, like say an endurance horse or a three-day event horse or a race horse or something, I don't think they're going to be able to exist just on TNT. They're going to need a little bit more calories, and that's when I'd use the Complete. And you could use some of the TNT with the Complete at that point. But we have other horses that aren't competing at that high caloric value need do just fine on just the TNT is what we're finding. And he says, why do dogs like horse manure? Again, it's same story as the babies. The dogs are trying to reestablish gut flora, and possibly there's some minerals in there that the dogs can also use too. It's almost like eating sauerkraut. It's pre-digested for them. Again, support digestion, DynaPro, get the pH of the gut proper, and they usually will go away from eating the horse manure. We have a question here about, what about enterolifts, the cause, the symptoms, the solution? Enterolifts are stones that form in the intestines of the horse. My feeling, the biggest cause of them is a pH imbalance that's happening in the horse, and that's what allows it to happen. Alfalfa hay has been tied to it. When we had Mount St. Helens in Washington, a lot of horses were getting enterolifts just from the ash dust that was falling down onto the hay, and then it was put together and then baled, and then they continued to eat it, and so they got tons of enterolifts. I saw one that was like this big around, taken out of one horse. It weighed 22 pounds, I believe it was. But again, it's pH. You look at a horse kind of like you do at the cement truck going down the road. and it's constantly moving. You know, if they didn't have that thing turning while it went down, everything would start to settle. And that's why we like to free choice hay to the horses, or have pasture that the horses can eat and move would be the optimum thing going in there, getting live foods and stuff and doing that. So my solution would be lots of DynaPro with them, lots of live food. The liver the food, the better, you know, fresh grasses to eat, and motion.
Those are actually struvite stones, and that's magnesium ammonium phosphate stones. If you don't have any one of the of those components present, then the stones don't form. So ammonium would be the ammonia that's formed by default from the high acid from the alfalfa. So they found that horses that tend to be stone formers can't tolerate any alfalfa hay at all. Basically, if you break up that cycle by just getting rid of the alfalfa, you won't have the stones forming. So it definitely does go back to the pH imbalance. I've got another question here. Can you discuss hair coat quality and how it correlates to minerals and vitamins? The body works on a priority system. Internal organs first, you know, the heart, the brain, all of the things that keep us functioning. Then once the mineral reserves are satisfied and all of the organ deficiencies or imbalances are taken care of, then the body has enough minerals and energy left over to address the outside. So if you don't have healthy hair and healthy fingernails and healthy skin, you ain't healthy on the inside, you know, and the body is still working at a level that you can't see.
That's what the body will always do to stay alive. What about bleeders, trace minerals, ascorbidine, things like that?
We kind of covered that in the section on corn oil, where we said that one of the things the fractionated oils do is suppress absorption of the fat-soluble vitamins. Vitamin K is essential for blood clotting, and also capillary strength is dependent on vitamin C. We've even had vets. We had a vet that came to one of the seminars, and we were talking a little bit about the concept of natural worming versus just doing the chemicals routinely. He said, I've seen horses' lives that have been saved by some of the newer chemical wormers. And I said, I absolutely will grant you that. There's a time to use the chemical wormers. He said, I've seen horses die of horrible aneurysms. And I said, okay, knowing that vitamin C and copper are the two major nutrients for blood vessel integrity, which came first, the unhealthy horse or the parasite-induced aneurysm? You know, if you've got weak blood vessels, it doesn't take a whole lot to cause an aneurysm from the parasites chewing away in there. If you've got healthy blood vessels, healthy immune system, then it really isn't an issue.
So if you had a bleeder and you wanted to deal with it, we've had good success with putting them on the trace mineral drops initially, probably for like a 20-day period. And then I prefer adding the super stress initially with them. It has the ascorbidine in it, which is the bioflavonoids and the ester C. And then it also has the blood builders, which has a lot of copper in it also to help with the capillary fragility. And no works. You can gallop them, but no works during that first initial one-month treatment.
Well, we had a two-year-old quarter horse filly that just set a track record at Ruidoso Downs with 110 speed index, which is just flat screaming. She was a filly that had been a bad bleeder, and they had tried Chinese herbs, they'd tried Lasix, they'd tried Ventopulmin, you know, anything that conventionally be done for bleeding had been tried on her, and it just wasn't working. So they put her on the Dynamite Trace Minerals, the full program, the super stress. She came back and set this track record and didn't bleed. So again, it absolutely works, but it's about giving the body the tools it needs. It doesn't bleed because it has a Lasix deficiency. It bleeds because the capillaries are fragile.
There's a fixing time and there's a healing time. So the fixing time might not take very long. It might be just an easy, simple solution of changing some geopathic stress. And then you have to allow the body to heal up after you remove that stress. And that's what some people get a little bit impatient with, it was the healing time. And we have another question. I know Judy's done a lot of research on this one. It was ulcers. So what about ulcers in horses?
The ulcer thing is huge right now. And, of course, the Nalox and all of the ulcer drugs that are coming out for horses, which are pretty similar to Tagamet or Prilosec for people. Because horses are trickle feeders, meaning they need to be eating all the time. They're designed by nature to eat that way. Our stomachs are fully lined with mucosal cells, that is gastric tissue. In the horses, the top part of their stomach is just like the outside of their skin, only without the hair. It's just skin. So whenever there's a high acid content, which can be triggered by the horses eating a grain meal, that acid will start to erode away at that unprotected part of the stomach and you end up with ulcers. Research has shown that up to 90 or 95% of all performance horses have ulcers. It can manifest as tooth grinding, as just kind of general discomfort, kind of low-level colic symptoms, cribbing. They've now found a huge correlation between cribbing and ulcers because they'll crib worse at feeding time. You know, they'll take a bite of grain, then they'll go, you know, and then they'll take another bite of grain. They're genuinely in pain. So high-grain diets will also predispose to the ulcer syndrome. Horses need to eat on the ground because they get a lot better saliva flow. So here we are putting their food up in a nice bucket or a nice manger. Chewing is what triggers the saliva flow.
Kicking, too.
Kicking?
That's what they do when they get ulcers.
Oh, yeah. They'll kick and paw, too. So chewing triggers the saliva flow. If they're eating a high-fiber grass hay, they're kicking out just gallons and gallons of saliva, which also buffers that stomach acid. When they eat grain, it requires very little chewing. It's acid-forming. And it goes in the stomach, and it's like, ow, ow, ow. I mean, I had a mare that had ulcers years ago before I figured out what was going on with her. She'd eat her grain at night, which was her little pittance, and within 10 minutes, she'd be on the ground. And she'd lay down for 10, 15 minutes, then she'd get up and go back to her dinner. But it hit her just that fast. So I'd always heard, don't feed grain on an empty stomach. Feed the hay, go water, do some other stuff, and then you go back and you give them their grain if they get grain. You don't just go out in the morning and say, here's your grain, and then feed them the hay. For one thing, the grain will get shoved on through by the hay, and it really needs to be acted on by the stomach acid, so you're minimizing the amount of grain that they digest. But you actually can kick them into the ulcer thing by feeding a big grain meal when there's not a lot of hay to go with it. I mean, don't feed them the grain when they're really hungry, because they will just bolt it down and not really chew, and that causes a problem. So our miracle clay has proven just actually miraculous for ulcers. And it is in our pelleted grain ration at about 25 pounds per ton, which is another reason if you have an ulcer-prone horse, it's an awesome feed ration because, A, you feed them way less grain, and, B, it's buffered.
The other thing with ulcers, allopathic thinking is always that something did it to us. We're all the victim thing, right? And so they try to isolate a bacterium around the ulcer called, and they've isolated Heliobacter. Again, they're opportunists. They cannot control their environment. We have to set the stage for bacteria to multiply and have fun. So the Heliobacter don't create the ulcer. They actually are trying to clean up the ulcer. In our infinite dumdumness, we decided that bacteria did it to us, and so then they put them on antibiotics and all those other things, which actually throws the pH off of the gut worse, and then they get addicted to that, and then it's a downward spiral from there. Another question here is please discuss why vitamin E and iron may be deficient in blood tests. This is a great question because a lot of times what you will find is a horse that you'll do a blood test and the horse is nice and calm and peaceful and everything and he's working well and everything and you do a blood test and he might be iron deficient or anemic. Charlie Whittingham, who's a Hall of Fame race trainer, used to always say, if you want a good blood test, just give me the horse and a whip in 5 minutes and I'll get you a good blood test. Usually horses that are in pain or have more oxidative processes going on in their body will have a higher hemoglobin content, a higher RBC content, and a higher vitamin E content because of the need for dealing with the pain and the stress that they're under. So when you have a horse that's performing well, the gums look good, no dehydration on pinch test, he might have a blood test that looks like the horse is anemic. But nothing points to that he's anemic because all the blood cells are stored in that spleen. When he needs it in his performance, it dumps out right then. So if you would take the test after performance, you'd see the true level of what that horse needed at that performance. Remember, a blood test is kind of a snapshot in time there.
Well, that was like a huge one for me, and it's one of the things that once Jim explains it, it's like, oh, yeah, that was so obvious, but I just hadn't thought of that twist. His comment is, a body that's at peace isn't revved up for battle or competition or whatever. It's the horse is just hanging out, and you come along and do a blood test. It's actually a compliment to the program that the red blood cell level isn't through the roof because the horse is chilled, mellow, happy, comfortable. And then they'll go out and just run like crazy. I mean, we've had horses at the track that they're standing there with their head on their stall guard sleeping 10 minutes before they go across the track to go win their race. And people come along and say, well, that horse isn't going to run, you know. Look at him. He's asleep. He's, yeah, he's resting. He's happy, you know. He's just chilling out till race time. The ones that run the race in the stall or on the way across the track or in the paddock or on the way to the gate, being hyper isn't an indicator of a horse that's on the muscle and ready to go. It's an indicator of a horse that's out of balance.
Hello, this is Dr. Regan Golub. Since you have listened all the way to here, you obviously appreciate the value of the information given in this program. I find most people learn by repetition, repetition, repetition. You will choose to know this information from the heart. The animals will sense that instead of coming from your brain. Speaking of new info, I am available for talks, seminars, workshops, and apprenticeship programs all across the USA and in foreign countries to pass on current knowledge, to give people hands-on experience, and to pass on all that I have learned and still learning. I have been working with horses, cattle, dogs, people for 40-plus years professionally. For more information about these, go to www.docgolub.com, and always keep in mind that in exchange for their freedom, there is an implied covenant for us to provide animals the most nutrient-rich, stress-free environment possible. By always applying what you learn to the health of your animals, as you are the ambassador for their health. This is Dr. Regan Golub, hoping we meet somewhere along the trail.